So Benjamin Network Oral History Project, Your Story. My name is Audra Rise, and I'm interviewing Bruce Manuel, ID number 1.224. Okay, so I'm gonna let you continue with this story of, so you took a tour here at Suwanee.
Yes.
Straight out of high school.
Right, yes. Right. Reverend Jeff Walker, who was he taught a class at my boarding school that I attended in Houston. He, when I was a senior in high school, he was coming up for a meeting, and he had been talking to me about Suwanee, and I was looking at different schools. Mm-hmm. So he brought me up on it was at that time they used to have what they called party weekends. Yeah, I don't know if they still have them, but they always had like a fall party weekend and a spring party weekend.
Okay,
and so it's just. That's what it is. You know, people just kind of cut loose the student, you know, blow off steam. So
okay.
I was in high school, and I was like, wow, this is great. This is a fun place. Mm-hmm. And I was used to being in the country,
you know.
And the, you know, the mountain is so beautiful. I just was like, wow, I would like to try this. And I wanted to get out of Texas. I wanted to see something different. You know, it was different. Come to a school where there were so few people of color, you know, that was kind of intimidating. But other than that, I still, you know, was excited about, you know, the school. It was different environment at that time. This was the mid-70s. There were a lot of hippies, you know, on campus. A lot of people were hippies, and there was still a lot of that 60s and 70s radicalism that was going on campus.
Okay.
So I really that sort of appealed to me.
Yeah.
Because you also had Suwanee being a very conservative school, and you still had that very deep conservatism too. Because at that time, as an undergrad student, you had to wear a coat and ties to class every day.
Ah.
Yes, it was a dress code. And girls, I think girls were required to wear dresses. I think they would wear pants. A lot of people just, you know, violated, but unless, you know, if they want to make an issue of it, they would, but people, yeah, we were required to wear a coat and tie to class.
Just to class.
Yes, just to class every day. And at that time, we only had a few, one or two dorms that were co-ed.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them were, you know, like male dorms or female dorms.
Mm-hmm.
And the rule was, like, for example, you couldn't be in a female dorm, women's dorm, after 10 o'clock.
Okay, yeah.
And so for guys, for guys, so if any guy, like, you know, get a girlfriend and you stayed overnight in a dorm room, you had to be gone by 6 o'clock in the morning.
Oh.
And it was a lot of creeping, sneaking and creeping. And, it was funny. And, it was... Oh, and at that time, the dorms had these elderly women, and most were like widows. They called them matrons.
Yeah, and dorm mothers, matrons.
Yeah, yeah, and matrons. Okay. And so, and some of them were kind of laid back. Some of them in the women's dorms were much more, you know, draconian. You know, they were like, you know, they were like, they really would pay attention over what's going on with my girls. You know, who are these guys trying to sneak in and creep in my dorm? So. Yeah, it was kind of interesting, but yeah, it was an interesting combination. The other thing I seen that was very, very different at that time.
Mm-hmm. What's that?
Now a lot of kids are involved in the Greek organizations.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think it's 90%+.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
At that time, it was nowhere near that. It was much more like I don't know, maybe 50%. You know, were in the Greeks. A lot of kids were independent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, GDIs. We're called goddamn independence. And so, yeah, so we had a really big intramural program, you know.
Okay.
Playing softball, flag football, basketball, you know. And so so the kids in the Greek organizations, if you weren't in a Greek organization, you could still participate. So a lot of the independents would form their own teams.
Gotcha.
You know. Some of them were formed around dorms, you know.
Okay, yeah.
You know, like guys in a particular dorm might, you know, form like a softball team. Like, I played softball and I played basketball. So yeah, that was a lot of fun. And a lot more things were student driven, I think. I think it's very different. Being an African American student here, there's still, at least like, less than 10 years after, the Martin Luther King assassination, and the racism in the community was really, really, really bad, going to Tracy City, Gwinnett County was a sundown, county.
County.
I remember one time I went with a group of kids, we went to Nashville to see Bob Marley. Bob Marley played in, this is when he was on that Babylon by Bus tour.
Yeah.
And so he was playing in Vanderbilt in the gym.
Yeah.
It was a really amazing concert. But the guy, so one person was driving with a bunch of his pals in his pickup truck. It was like fall, so it was cold. And I remember for some reason, I think the driver got lost or something on the way back. And they stopped for directions. And I remember I was in the back, in the bed of the truck with some other kids.
Yeah.
And we were kind of covered over by the blankets and stuff. I remember they drove to this place, and it must have been a KKK gathering, some kind of white supremacist thing going on, because I remember a couple of kids in the bed in front of the truck. They said Bruce, they said, just don't raise up, don't show your head, just be cool, and yeah, they were like, I have to ask some of the folks, because I couldn't really see what was going on, but apparently there was like some real. Big time, white supremacists that were having some kind of a gathering or whatever. And so we came back, but we had a lot of incidents, a lot of cops on campus, but not a lot of the cops. Some of the cops on campus were very racist, at that time. Very racist. And there were, some of those fraternities, like particularly like some of the traditionally Southern fraternities were extremely racist. Like the SAEs, I'm gonna call them names, SAEs and KAs. Were really, really racist. I mean, they were unapologetically racist. And it's funny because, when I left Swanee, I graduated in 1980, I thought I would never return, and I didn't return for like 30 years. Part of the reason was I joined the military after graduating. I was in the Navy for 20 years. And so I was always stationed around different places. The closest I was ever stationed was to, Norfolk, Virginia.
Okay.
And so, New Orleans, at the end of my career, I was in station in New Orleans. But in 2010, I came back to an alumni weekend homecoming. And I saw a lot of the changes that had occurred. I saw the number of students that were here, kids of color. And so I started, it rekindled my love of the mountain. Because my experiences were not all bad. I had some great friends, you had some great experiences. So it rekindled that love I had, about 3 years after that, I was getting close to where I was thinking about where I would like to retire. I was working for the government at the time, civil service. So after the military, I went to the University of New Orleans, and I got my MBA.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to work for Department of Defense as a civil servant, as an IT worker. So, 30 years of working for the government, I said, I wonder where I'd like to retire. So I started thinking about, retiring here. So, I got an agent in around 2013.
Mm-hmm.
My agent called and said, there's a house coming for sale. It's a nice little house. I think you might be interested. And he said, it's a well-made, older house, but it's, in good shape.
Mm-hmm.
So I came up, I saw it, and I liked it, and put down an offer. So I bought it like in 2013.
Mm.
So I started renting it to some staff members that were at the time. And then in 2016, I retired myself, an opportunity to retire from the government. So then I decided to move up here.
That's what made your way back up here.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And so I've been here since 2016.
Hello. Hi.
Hey.
And so the other reason why I decided to move here is because I really wanted to develop as a writer, because that's what I really wanted to be when I graduated from Swanee.
Okay.
Was to be a writer.
And what was your degree? What did you major in?
I was an English major, English literature.
Okay.
And so I really wanted to be a writer, you know. But at the time, there was really no guidance, you know, for young artists, you know, to help you sort of plan out a career,
yeah.
you know. And like the school letters was not around at the time.
Okay.
Swanee Writers Conference had not been established. So there's really no guidance, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I grew up in the hood. I grew up from you know blue collar family, you know. And so I really wasn't in a position where you know I could be at home and then you know have time to really think about how I wanted to, what path I would take to follow my purpose.
Right. You saw 9 to 5 at home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. And so I joined the military.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing, I joined the military is because I was really interested in technology.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I was an English major, I knew that I could foresee that this is in the early 80s,
mm-hmm.
before the internet, before personal computers,
mm-hmm.
Before all that stuff, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I could see that technology was going to be more, I just had a sense that there was going to be more a part of our lives.
Yeah.
So I wanted to get into a career path that would. I would be learning more about technology, get more, you know, incorporated. And plus, as a writer, as a reader, I've always been interested in science fiction.
Mm-hmm.
So that genre of literature. And so I discovered that the Navy and the Air Force are very much technology driven.
Yeah.
So that's why I joined the Navy. And also the Navy, you know, at that time there were a lot of great Navy movies. That's when Top Gun was out, and Officer and Gentleman. Hunt for Red October. There were so many good ones, you know. I mean, every, you know, popular Hollywood actor was in, you know, a military, Navy movie. Yeah, and so.
Makes sense.
So, yeah, so I decided to go to the Navy. So it was tough being an English major and a macho engineer, you know, oriented, you know, world. But, I mean, the thing that helped me was I've always had a good aptitude in math. And so that helped me a lot, you know.
You mentioned the military. Was there still like a military presence here when you were
No. In fact, it was in the early 70s, maybe 72 or something like that, or 73. They the students voted to disband the ROTC unit.
Okay.
And so, In fact, I had a friend who was a seminarian at the time, an older gentleman. He was a retired Air Force officer, and he was encouraging me to join the Air Force, but to join the an Air Force ROTC unit at Vanderbilt.
Okay.
But I just couldn't see how I would do that because Vanderbilt's so far away.
Yeah.
You know, I wasn't sure how I would you know work that. You know, so I didn't really consider it at that time. But yeah, no. At that time, the Swanee Military Academy was still around.
Okay.
And so they merged with St. Andrews in 1980.
Mm, that's right. 1980. Yeah.
In fact, I graduated just before Eric Benjamin came here.
Oh, okay. Right before. Okay, so you didn't have any. So like, who were like? Talk to me about. Like your experiences with, so you mentioned it was about maybe 25 kids of color.
That was when I first came, but by
your
the time,
first came.
But that first year, the majority of them graduated. My first year, the majority of them graduated that year.
So, did you have any interactions with the other kids of color that were here?
Oh yeah. And I mean, most, like I said, most of them that were here at that time were seniors when I was
That's
a freshman.
Older.
So yeah, so I mean, I did, but you know, I was just a little freshman, so you know, I didn't have much in common with me.
Okay.
I mean, I was kind of like in awe of them, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so, as time went on, there were fewer and fewer of us, you know.
Mm-hmm.
One time, I remember there was only like about 5 students on campus.
Oh.
Yeah, during that period of time, during you know the mid to late 80s,
mm-hmm.
I mean mid to late 70s.
70s, yeah.
Yeah, and. So yeah, there were very, very few of us, and you know, an interesting thing. And so, in fact, I left at one point for a leave of absence after my sophomore year, and I almost went to Howard University.
Hmm.
Almost left from the Howard. I remember I left that fall, and at the time I was living at home, and there was a couple who African American couple who were on the board of trustees of the school I went to, and they were both graduates of Howard, and so I met them that fall, and they were like, "You're out of school. We can get you Howard." You know, I was like, "That's great." You know, so they said, "Well, we don't think we can get you in until the following fall."
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't want to be out of school for an entire year, and so I mean, I just didn't. I mean, if probably someone said, "Okay, well, why don't you, you know, maybe go to junior college here in Houston, you know, in the interim until you, you know, go," but nobody really presented me with any options, you know, like that. And I really started thinking, you know, I left Swanee and I was here on an academic scholarship.
Okay.
I was a Wilkins scholar.
Okay. Yeah.
And so I had full academic scholarship. So I did work study because I didn't feel like I was, you know, working, you know, getting something back for my education.
Yeah.
And which was the model of the boarding school I went to. It's called Something for Something, Quid Pro Quo. That's their motto. And so so I decided to come back to Swanee in the spring, and I wanted to prove to myself that I could make it here. And so in the interim, while I was, you know, out of school, I was like working, you know, just labor jobs, you know, working in warehouse, working, I did backbreaking work at a warehouse here in Chattanooga, you know, just, it was in the summertime, I remember, I moved up here, it was summertime, and so at that time, I think it's still there. It's in that area where you're just, you're familiar with Chattanooga.
Yeah.
Okay, so you know where, like, you're in Georgia, and you come back into Tennessee, and you pass the Welcome Center.
Yes.
And then there's like this, you can see Lookout Mountain off to the right.
Okay.
So there's like a valley in between the interstate and Lookout Mountain.
Uh-huh.
In that valley, there's a lot of warehouses, industrial, you know, things. And there's this huge food warehouse. It was like a quarter mile square. It was a giant warehouse.
That's big.
And they used to, I guess it's still there, they would bring these train cars loaded with products from companies like General Mills, Pillsbury, those kind of companies. And so they would ship a flour bag, like 100-pound bags of flour, 100-pound packages of like cereal, stuff like that. And so, you know, these rail cars would come in. It was like, you know, hot. Human is here, so they'd be sitting in this hot rail car, so you bring them in the warehouse, and so they have to offload. So, but you can't just offload them with a forklift, at least not at that time. So you'd have to, like, two men would have to go inside the rail car. You'd have to offload about 8 pallets of that stuff, and then restack it out on the floor to make room for the forklifts coming and offload. You know, so you know these rail cars would be sitting in the sun, so it'd be like over 100 degrees inside those rail cars. Like an oven. You get in there and you be like, you know, humping those 100-pound bags of flour and this and that, you know. And so after I worked there for about like several months, you know, and I said, yeah, I realized to myself, this is work, you know, this is work. And school is not work, you know. I was like, I had an epiphany. It was like, here you go, boy, you know, working like a dog, you know, and you got a full scholarship at Swanee. I said, I'm gonna go back there and I'm gonna prove myself that I can make it there. And I came back, you know, I was a lot more mature, and I just, you know, I mean, I didn't have much of a social life, but, you know, I knew what I was here for, and so I just focused on my education. And I think maybe it was my background and just kind of going through a trial by fire, you know, I developed a lot of resilience. And I think that's something that's so important for kids, you know, to develop resilience, you know, because it's not going to, when you get out in the world, it's not all going to be peaches and cream, you know.
Sure.
And I think and that's something I always sort of emphasize. And even, you know, with things that the university does, you know, with kids of color, you know, it's good. I know it's important to help kids feel, you know, at home here. And those type of things, but there also needs to be part of the thing that I think is a responsibility is to teach life skills, you know, and resilience, and being able to bounce back from disappointment, from defeat, from, you know, encountering obstacles.
Yeah.
That is absolutely critical, you know. Almost more critical than getting a good education, you know. Because there's a lot of smart people who are complete failures, you know, because they never learn how to deal with disappointment.
Yeah, yeah.
They never learn how to deal with, how do I, keep moving forward, despite the fact that the people that I'm with, they don't like me or they don't want me there, mm-hmm. I found it so important. I learned that also in the military, that it's so important to discover what is your purpose, in life. What brings meaning to your life? And because if you can find that and you can follow that, then those types of things, those disappointments, those things that knock you down, finding your purpose is what will help you, pick yourself back up, And in fact, it reminds me of this old Rocky movie, it was like the last Rocky movie. Well, not the last. It was the one where it was like the rags to riches story where he's poor and he becomes a champ. He's rich, and on this one, Adrian has died. He's poor.
Oh, okay.
He's back in the hood.
Yeah, in his old neighborhood.
Yeah, he's in the neighborhood. And that's when he's like trying to help the boxer Tommy.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's like Rocky. He runs into his son. His son's is grown now. His son's like some Wall Street big shot. And so his son doesn't want to talk to him. He's like shamed of him, because he's, because Rocky's poor now and everything. Like he's lost all his money. Mm-hmm. His brother-in-law gave away all his money on poor business, decisions because his brother-in-law became like his financial advisor. So anyway, the son just really rejects him. So Rocky tells him, he says something like, it doesn't matter how many times you get knocked down. He says nothing will give you a knockout punch like life. He says, but it doesn't matter how many times you get knocked down. Mm. What matters is how many times you get back up and keep moving forward.
Mm.
And so I'm like, yeah, that's it, And I think I learned that at the school I went to before I came to Swan.
Name the school that you're in high school?
Yeah, let me write it down for you.
Okay.
It's, let me see.
Right at the bottom.
Yeah. And so, it was a great program because it really taught me a lot. It's now called Chinkopin Prep.
Chinkopin Prep.
Mm-hmm. Put down their website just in case you want to check them out.
So I have like one last question for mm-hmm. you. Because you mentioned a lot about like how your high school like helped prepare you and actually just being in that environment, being exposed to like farm life, then coming up here wasn't like a big shock. What you learned being an inner city kid, and just even what you learn in Chattanooga, working in a warehouse, like doing something that was laborious, instead of just focusing how that actually instilled in a lot of you to be successful here. Mm-hmm. What was it that you learned here
that helped me be successful?
Yeah, or that you can pinpoint, I learned this here. Because you even spoke about the military, which I know is huge. The military does informing in your life, but what was it about your experience here that you think stuck with you or that you learned that was embedded in your core of who you are?
Well, one of the people that really was a great helped me in inspiration was Miss Chitty, Elizabeth Chitty.
Elizabeth Chitty.
She was like the financial aid officer.
Okay.
And she was just so great. She had a lot of faith in me. She helped me. She was a great lady, and so she, in fact, she helped me get a scholarship so I could go to Oxford. They had a program in the summer.
Yeah.
We spent a semester in Oxford.
Oxford, England.
Oxford, England, yes. And so that was great, and she always stood back behind me and mm-hmm. encouraged me and stuff. And she did for a lot of kids that were like here on scholarships.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and she was just great. And so, one of the things I learned was, I think it was an important lesson, was that in terms of like dealing with people, looking past these superficial things that people place. One of the things I learned, one of the very, 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 very important lessons I learned, I think, here, is that, and it kind of relates to racism.
Mm-hmm.
Racism, people use racism as an excuse to behave badly, you know, when there's something else that is underlying their motives.
Mm-hmm.
And people use racism as a way of getting away with it, because very often when people do something that they know is wrong to someone that everybody around them considers the other,
mm-hmm.
then they can get away with it.
Mm.
And so the thing that I've learned, I mean, just like, you know, the things that used to happen to us, things that still happen to us, people of color, so I've learned to, number one, to understand my own value, and to not react to what people do, you know, because one of the things I've learned is that if people don't know you and they respond to you with hostility,
mm-hmm.
it's not you that they're being hustled for. There's some construct they've developed in their own minds, and so I don't allow that to trigger me to, as once did when I was young, to
mm-hmm.
react in kind, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I basically just don't allow that to throw me off my game. And so then I can look at that person very, you know, closely and see
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
what's really going on, you
mm-hmm.
know, with this person. You know.
So you know that hostility, there's something more.
Absolutely, there's
something more.
There's so many things. So many things. It's just like, you know, we'll take the historical case, you know, like
mm-hmm.
the case in Black Wall Street and, you know, Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when the white mob, you know,
mm-hmm.
burned down, it was because of jealousy, you know, and envy of the success of the black people, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they wanted their land, they were jealous of their success, you know. You know, and so they used their racism, you know,
mm-hmm.
to be able to perpetrate, you know, crimes against these people
mm-hmm.
because they knew they'd get away with it.
Mm-hmm.
You see,
mm-hmm.
and that's one thing that I learned, I think, here is that, and that's why that's one of the reasons why I talk to when I have the opportunity to mentor students is to tell them to don't just isolate yourselves within your group.
Yeah.
You know, there's too much of that that goes on, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I see that from the outside looking oftentimes in the Greek, you know, the
mm-hmm.
Greek organizations, because
mm-hmm.
they sort of isolate themselves within the people that are like, just like them, look like them, think like them, you know. And I try to encourage students to try to get to know people who are different from you, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Try to get to know them, and you'll find that there's more common ground than what you may believe,
mm-hmm.
you know, either by what you project or what they project, you know.
Yeah.
And so that's something I learned, you know. And also I learned just the love of literature
mm-hmm.
and being intellectually curious. I think Swanee actually helped me have the courage to go to the military.
Mm.
You know, because I made it here.
you can't, wait a minute.
I figured I may as well give it a try, you know. Yeah.
I like that.
You know?
So, he made it here, so yeah, I can make it in the military.
Yeah.
I like that.
And that was far harder. It was far, far, far more difficult. You know, that's, you know, military break you down. There's a lot of people that come out broken. A lot of veterans are broken. That's why a lot of veterans have so much suicide. You know, suicide rates is very high amongst veterans.
You know, that's, I think that's part of the design
that it's a system that breaks you down so they can build you up to what they want you
absolutely.
To be.
Absolutely. They want to reconstruct your
yeah.
self-image into and they're always trying to tell you who you should be.
Do you think here, did you experience like your teachers or your academics or maybe socials trying to build you up into something they saw you being? Or do you think, or was it different? Like, did you experience like, because there's a molding process. That's
yeah, absolutely.
Here.
There were some I had a couple, you know, professors who I thought were, they displayed a certain arrogance, you know, and oftentimes these are, I know at least one example of a person that really, you know, hadn't really spent much time outside of this, the academic,
yeah.
you know, bubble,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
Who really hadn't experienced the world, who really didn't know, you know, who had no idea where I came from,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
Oh, it's really funny. I remember. So my friend Jeff, I didn't have any dress shirts or
okay.
ties or anything like that. So
uh-huh.
my friend Jeff gave me some, you know, shirts and ties and uh-huh. stuff that he had that would fit me, you know, at the time. And I remember there was a lady I knew. She was already in class, English class. And so after one day after class, you know, she told me, she said, you come from a rich family, don't you? I'm like, what? She's like, you come from a rich family? I'm like, no, I didn't. Because I didn't carry myself, because they perceived, I didn't carry myself how they perceived
a typical black person.
A typical black person from
yeah.
from poor
neighborhood. Okay.
You know,
okay.
You know, I and because that was one of the things that Mr. Moore, Robert P. Moore, who started the school,
mm-hmm.
instilled in us the confidence to know that you are just as good as anybody else.
Yeah.
You know, your value is. What you put into what you love to do,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's not based on what someone else imposes upon you,
mm.
you know,
that's good.
And not to look for some external entity to tell you who you are,
mm-hmm.
because that happens constantly.
Mm-hmm.
That's one thing I learned,
yeah.
you know, and I learned that in the military, it taught me that, you know, a great deal because, like I said, there's always someone telling you how you should dress, how you should look. How you should wear your hair, how you should eat, who you should hate, who you should, you know, admire, you know, everything, you know. And there was always a part, I always kept this part of me, you know, that was always sort of on the outside of that.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it taught me to keep that part of me, you know, so that, I think that's one reason why when I did get out of the military, I was able to, you know, it took me some years, but to recover, you know,
mm-hmm.
to who I am, you know, become more of who I am.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, yeah, it's, and I think that was a lesson that are really, really, really important. I think that's very lacking, I think, nowadays. I think because social media and
mm-hmm.
things like that always trying to project this influence on kids about how, who you should be or how you should look or,
yeah.
how you should think, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And so it's very hard, I think, for young people to develop the judgment, you know, to think critically about what sort of influences are on them. And we're not always aware of it, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
But just having the capacity to at least question, you know, where your thoughts and attitudes are coming from. It's incredibly important, and it's difficult, but it's something I have to do every day, you know.
To make sure your own thoughts are your own and not
absolutely.
You just regurgitating or repeating somebody else's.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
That's good. That's
yeah,
good. So. Is there anything else you want to leave us with? Or?
No, just appreciate hearing you listen to me.
Absolutely. This was good. I hope we can do this again if you would like a follow up.
Sure.
Maybe
yeah.
I can come sit on your porch and you can tell me some
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I love that. In fact, I'll give you my address. You can come by and have
okay.
You're welcome to come by and have a glass of wine and chat any day.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to